Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ree Graff. One of the few truly American days of celebration, the National Football League Super Bowl is upon us with kickoff between the Baltimore Ravens and San Francisco 49ers scheduled for 6:30 p.m. on Sunday from the Mercedes-Benz Superdome in New Orleans. This Super Bowl week has not been without its fair share of controversy. Yesterday, Baltimore Ravens linebacker Ray Lewis, for whom Sunday's big game will be his last professional contest, allegedly, refuted claims made in a Sports Illustrated article that he requested deer antler spray and pills containing a banned product connected to human growth hormone. Another storyline set to be wrapped up on Sunday is that of San Francisco quarterback Colin Kaepernick, who started his first NFL game a mere two and a half months ago, something like that. While the Super Bowl is the predominant sports story this week, we're joined today by a guest who has no problem discussing all aspects of sports and sports reporting. Heard here on these airwaves each Wednesday afternoon, Keith Strudler is chair of the Communication Department at Marist College and director of the Marist College Center for Sports Communication. Keith Strudler, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, you've done all sorts of broadcasting, but it's been a while since you've done a call-in show, eh?
This is outside of helping out some students at Marist. This is the first time I've taken a live call-in show, so I've gotten all the bad stuff out. I feel ready to...
You relaxed?
As relaxed as I get.
Do you need some deer antler spray before we start?
No, I took some before I got
okay.
Here. I usually, people don't know this, I put it in my coffee in the morning.
Yeah, who doesn't? Yeah. Now listen, you can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop. Or you can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Or you can tweet your comments and questions at WAMC Vox Pop. The easiest old-fashioned way is give us a call. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Well, before we get into antler spray and head injuries and some of the other things swirling around the game, let's talk about the game. Who do you like?
You know, I mean, as a fan, I don't like the Ravens.
Yeah.
And since I base pretty much everything on being a fan, which is why I lose the NCAA tournament pool every year, I like the Niners. I like the Niners.
You think, you know, I'm in one of those situations where, you know, my team season ended a month ago, and I will certainly have the game on, but I must say I don't like either Harbaugh, either one.
Yeah, I like the energy of Jim Harbaugh. He seems to have gotten more of the energy of the family, and I don't know, it was the younger child thing. He was the runt of the family, but I have always liked coaches that almost can't control themselves, and I love the thrill of watching him try to give a handshake at the end of the game. And so he's also one of those guys. He reminds me of Lou Holtz, where you know when most people have 16 hours in a game in a day, he has like 70 because he seems to work in overdrive.
Yeah.
So if you give him 2 weeks to prepare for, if we told it gave him 2 weeks to cure cancer, I think he could do it. I mean, he works that quickly, and I just think you don't like to give those guys that much time.
You know, intellectually, I agree with your argument, and that maybe the San Francisco wins the game. I got a gut feeling Baltimore wins this game. I think Flacco's got a hot hand right now. The 49ers, as great as they have looked, there was at least one occasion this season when they were supposed to win big and they were destroyed. And that was week six when the Giants went in to San Francisco and beat the stuffing out of them.
That was done. That was on purpose because the Giants like to give everyone false hope. I think that was planned as part of the season, part of the orchestration of the season, so Giants fans could get excited so they could have their slump after that.
1-800-348-2551 is our number. Keith Strudler is our guest. We talk sports today and the Super Bowl in particular. Don in Windsor. Don, you're on.
Hi, Ray and Keith. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Hey, I grew up in Eastern Mass, so I'm a really big Patriots fan. So I think, needless to say, I hope the Ravens get killed by San Francisco. And I'm hoping that Kaepernick really kind of continues with his outstanding athletic play and really hands it to him.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was definitely, when it came down to the final four, I was rooting for the Patriots, and I almost never do that. So that was probably the kiss of death for your team, Don.
Right. Dan, yeah. You shouldn't have Giants fans rooting for the Patriots, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's not bad. Now, Kaepernick, I mean, Keith, is this a flash in the pan? In other words, 180 yards rushing, a couple of weeks back. Clearly, he's as fast as he's going to be. Project 5 years into the future, does he have what it takes to be a pocket passer?
He's got, I mean, again, I'm certainly not a talent scout. He seems to have a lot of tools. But I think like every other person that watches the NFL, there's a concern that he will, too, end up, in a hospital bed someday having his knees operated on. And, you don't stay young forever. And there is it's hard to bet against this kid right now. But on the other hand, I don't know that he has it in him. And not just because he physically may not have it in him. You know, football is very much a mental game, particularly for quarterbacks. It would be interesting to see if he has the discipline to be able to sit back in the pocket and throw the ball. And I think that's tough.
And I think the Ravens will try to box him in and keep him in that pocket as much as they can. Dan, what's your prediction on the game?
I think it'll be pretty close, low-scoring game. You know, I'm thinking maybe, like 21-14 or something like that, the San Francisco.
Okay.
But you also got to remember with Kaepernick, he used to be a baseball pitcher, and he can throw a baseball over 90 miles an hour, so he's got a really good, accurate arm, too.
Yeah.
So it's not just his feet that are going to help him.
Yeah, and I like the maturity that brings to the game for him. Because, the thing that worried me the most was bringing in a rookie quarterback or bringing in a young quarterback.
Mid-season. Yeah, second-year
quarterback. This is his first big shot. And I always worry about the intensity of the game, which no matter what it is, what you've done before, this is still over the top and overwhelming. But, when these guys already have a professional career, and this becomes kind of their second act, it's a lot easier than taking a kid right out of school and throwing him in there. So, I don't think it's going to throw him that much.
All right, Dan, hey, thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks a lot.
1-800-348-2551 is our number. Keith Strudler is our guest today on Vox Pop, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go over to Ken in Durham. Ken, you're on.
Yeah, greetings. Thank you. I'm wondering if you folks have any thoughts on why there's only one team that is owned by the fans, and if you can give me any background that I may be unaware of regarding other efforts by other cities.
Okay, so you're referring to the Packers, who are a team community-owned, essentially.
Exactly. I mean, to me, they're my backup. If I don't have a dog in the fight, I always root for Green Bay, specifically because the fans own the team. I think it's a phenomenal idea. And why is it not bigger in pro sports in general? I have a theory that the advertisers are not happy with that idea for reasons I can't articulate yet, but let me leave it there.
Well,
interesting.
I have a theory. It's very, very expensive.
It
costs a lot of money. And, there's probably a few explanations. Part of it is because a lot of these teams, particularly when you look at the AFL and they're growing, merging with the NFL.
Yeah.
This was a business, a big kind of business idea started by a bunch of renegade crazy businessmen that got together and said, "Hee-haw, I'll start a team in this emerging city. I'll start a team down south." And so I don't think these were kind of public efforts. This was a small emerging business. So it was created by businessmen who wanted to own a team. They're also, most of these teams, particularly some of the teams like Dallas and so on, these are vanity projects. I mean, people don't buy teams to make money. They buy teams because they want to own teams.
Yeah.
And so, I it would be hard for me to envision that same kind of movement happening, with a kind of a more, where it's a joint ownership kind of model. People who want to own football teams want to be in charge and own teams.
But, I mean, this is an interesting thing. I mean, you look back at some of the historic teams in this league. You have the Giants, the Maras owned them when they were worth nothing. And, of course, now it's a $1 billion or whatever industry, and that family has, along with the Tishes, have really hit the bank. But the Packers were an old school team as well, and at some point they made that switch. They weren't always community owned, were they?
I really don't know. But I would also say this for everyone that looks at, these teams and say, yeah, look, they went from being worthless and now they're worth billions and, the people should do this. Just remember there was something called the USFL once.
Yes,
there were
some owners, I remember it
some people that owned those teams that didn't do so well. So, you know, it's very expensive to do this, and it tends to be these are business ventures. The NFL, more than any of these professional sports leagues, was a business venture that made itself a made-for-TV product, and that's the kind of thing that's created by business people wanting to make money.
And I know you're a soccer fan, and I think that is a difference. Ken, thanks. So let's get your prediction before we let you go. Your prediction on the game.
Oh, Baltimore by a few points, only because I prefer that city.
I'm with you. Thanks, Ken. I appreciate it.
You prefer Baltimore? Baltimore, the city. But the city of Baltimore to the city of San Francisco? Well, that doesn't deserve discussion.
Sports friend. Well, you feel free to throw it out there.
San Francisco is a lovely city.
All right, fair enough. Right. Now, getting back to my point, and we'll take a break here in a minute, Zach. You're a soccer fan, and to what extent do you think soccer would have a chance to thrive, given the fact that it is not as TV-friendly, in that there are breaks built in to the NFL that you'd have to sizably change the game of soccer to really make it palatable to the American public? Yes or no?
Yes, and I'm sure we could get plenty of phone calls just on this comment alone, but I don't think that soccer in its current form is something that will be, highly successful as a mediated product in this country. I just, when I was a kid and I played youth soccer, and I was a kid, back in the 1800s, and and I played youth soccer like everyone played youth soccer, and I went to see Pele when he came, came to town, mm-hmm. and I was grew up in Houston, and everyone said, guess what? This is going to be the next big sport. You wait. When you're grown up, everyone's going to be watching soccer.
I've been hearing that a long time.
Because you're all playing it as kids. Well, I played Candyland as a kid, too.
Yeah, and that's huge.
It is huge, but it's not a great TV game. So that's, it's not created for television. The NFL was created for television. So there are things that might make soccer more popular in this country. Certainly immigration has changed that. I grew up in Houston. It's a popular sport down south.
Yeah. So 1-800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. Keith Strudler is our guest. Well, we'll talk about the advent of soccer, or maybe the demise of football, if you believe one football player. We'll talk about that next on Vox Pop.
Support comes from Kingsway Community, Schenectady, New York, offering care and services to area seniors since 1975, including nursing home, rehabilitation, and more. Caring in the family tradition, kingswaycommunity.com. Maria College, Albany, New York, offering RN Baccalaureate Completion Program, Associate Degrees, and Professional Certificate Programs, day, evening, weekend, and online classes. mariacollege.edu. Unison Arts Center, New Paltz, presenting the opening of the 10th Annual Life Drawing Show, Sunday, February 3rd from 4 to 6 p.m., curated by Unison founder Stuart Bigley. UnisonArts.org. And Cafe Capriccio, featuring Chef Jim Rua's book, Cafe Capriccio's Chef's Table, online and at the Bookhouse in Albany, New York. CafeCapriccio.com.
So the Fun Drive kicks off on Monday morning at 6 a.m. Alan is in the captain's chair, and we will be with you for all the fun and the all serious, serious side of this, which is keeping this radio station alive. The Lockbox is one way we can shorten this Fun Drive, and we're accepting early pledges for the next Fun Drive. It starts on Monday. You can make a secure online pledge right now at WAMC.org. Click on Lockbox. All the money raised will be added to the first day of the drive, and just as of a few moments ago, we've already raised $202,932 in the lockbox. That's pretty darn close to two full days of the drive we've shaved it off. So, hey, get in your lockbox pledge now. We'll count it all on day one. Meantime, it's Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Keith Strudler is our guest. He's our sports commentator. He is also chair of the communication department at Marist College and director of the College Center for Sports Communication at Marist. The head injury issue is a big deal and a growing deal. You have 3,800 some odd players, former players, who are suing the NFL. You had Junior Seau, whose brain showed evidence of this post-concussion disorder. You have a guy, I forget the player, but on Baltimore, saying the NFL won't even exist in 30 years. Will it get to that point, in your estimation, where the rules are so rigid and there is so much concern, rightfully so to some extent, about injury, that the NFL just won't be an entity.
I don't think that's happening in our lifetimes. I just don't see it. You know, there are some things that might force the game to change. And I'll kind of talk about NASCAR just to put this in perspective. Everyone always said that, you know, well, when people really start dying on the tracks, when people see that happening,
yeah,
NASCAR is going to go away. Well, we've seen that. We've seen that happen several times with star drivers. And there's this kind of notion of accepted risk. And one of the things that often gets considered when we talk about sport, if you see someone die in a place where there was an assumption that they weren't taking risk, we get very upset about it and we try to figure out ways to make that not happen again.
Yeah.
But I think there's largely the assumption that when you're an NFL player, when you play in the NFL, you know what you're getting yourself into, and you're making a lot of money. Even the president made that comment.
He made that exact point. But, of course, what he also said was he's more concerned about the college players and, before that, the high school players and protecting them.
Absolutely. And I wrote about this yesterday, was the way that this is going to change isn't going to be because someone says, you have to change, we're going to mandate, we're going to sue. It's going to be because people like me, and I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, and my 5-year-old and my 3-year-old, we sit around and we watch the Gators, and my 5-year-old thinks that every team that plays is the Gators, which is fine. He also only cheers for teams that are winning. So he'll say, which team is ahead? And I'll say, Seattle. He goes, that's great. I love Seattle.
Oh, no.
But I'll trick him, too. I'll tell him the wrong team.
Well, yeah. Fair enough.
But I think when those parents and people like me say, yeah, football is great, but you know what? We'll play lacrosse, or we'll play, you know, you'll play basketball.
Yeah.
That's when you start to have an issue. I think it's a bottom-up kind of situation.
Now, we got this from our producer, Patrick Donges, on the Packers. Here's this from Wikipedia. Packers are the only community-owned franchise in American professional sports major leagues. Based on the original Articles of Incorporation for the Green Bay Football Corporation, put into place in 1923. If the Packers franchise were to have been sold after the payment of all expenses, any remaining money would go to the Sullivan Post of the American Legion in order to build a proper soldiers' memorial. And it's the only team with a community structure of ownership in the entire NFL. So it goes way back. There you go.
I learned something from Wikipedia every day.
Well, thank you, Patrick Donges. Let's go back to the phones at 1-800-32—nope, that's our fund drive number, 1-800-348-2551. Jill in Waterford. Jill.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
I was going to semi-answer the question that you just had Wikipedia answer.
All right, we'll continue. I have all these statistics, and we'll test you on it. Go ahead.
Okay, I don't know how it started, so I guess Wikipedia has that one over me.
Mm-hmm.
But my understanding is that the reason it is the only community-owned team is because back in the day, like, you know, 50s, 60s, it was very successful, and the city owned it, so it can't go anywhere. And at some point, I don't even know when, but my understanding was at some point, the owners of the other teams all got together and voted that never again would a city own a team.
You're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, according to what Patrick gave me, in the 80s, there was a policy established by the NFL owners that said there has to be at least one owner with a minimum of 30% stake. And so the only team that was grandfathered was the Green Bay Packers. They're also the only major league sports team in America that releases its financial balance sheet every year. So there you go.
Wow.
Yeah. Who do you like in the Super Bowl, Jill?
I would like Baltimore to win only because I would like to see Ray Lewis get his ring, one more ring before he goes out. But I have a feeling it's going to be San Francisco.
All right. I think Keith is with you on that. Thanks a lot for the call. Ray Lewis, another situation. And you cover the media and sports a lot. Now, here's a guy with a somewhat troubled past, and you can certainly, there are gray areas, the murder indictment and whatnot. Does the media go too far to gloss that stuff over and make this guy into a saint here at the end of his career?
The short answer to that is probably yes. I mean, the reality is there's a great storyline of redemption here. The redeemed sinner who's come back and done all these wonderful things. And it's a the reality is, and I think I wrote this a couple weeks ago. He is clearly living in a world of gray. He's done a lot of bad things.
Yeah.
Regardless of the facts of that night, and we will never apparently fully know that, and some people have written some decent things about it, but we'll never know the details. But yeah, I think they are giving him a bit of a free ride. They've glorified him. You know, people enjoy the gospel, and not the gospel and the tradition, but they enjoy the gospel that is, you know, the hero,
yeah,
the redeemed hero. And I think he has gotten largely a free ride on this. Even this deer antler story, I mean, he's, you know, he was allowed to dismiss it rather quickly, and we haven't seen a whole lot on it. So
well, it was only yesterday, right?
It was only yesterday, but you know. I guess my quick answer to that is, yeah, he's gotten a free ride. On the other hand, you know, as we've seen today with the Dan Marino story, there's a lot of guys in this league that maybe aren't exactly who we think they are. And so,
you know, and performance-enhancing drugs and football has a different feel to me than in baseball, where records are paramount. In football, you sort of expect these guys to be, you know, it's a very physical game all the time. And you hear about something like this, and you say, well, you almost expect it.
Well, here's the other side of it. You could make this argument. This was the argument that people used to make with the Tour de France. How exactly do you expect them to finish this race without doing drugs? I mean, you know, how do you expect them to do what they do? So
yeah,
we're all very complicit in all the PEDs. I mean, we want them to be exactly who they are, these gladiators who can recover. You know, a guy goes down, and you say, when can he get back on the field? So we are just as bad as everyone else.
Well, the Ray Lewis injury this season, he came back in remarkably short order. So I can understand why there would be some suspicion about, not necessarily deer antlers.
That was
a new one on me, but, you know. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Russ in Malta. Russ, you're on with Keith Strudler.
Hello there, gentlemen.
Hi.
Actually, in my opinion, which, you know, watching these two teams, I think that the key to this game is going to be Frank Gore. I just think that the way the Niners came out after that last playoff game, it was a close game, and they weren't flustered at all. They didn't start putting it off, and they went right back to their ground game, right back to Gore. And I think by the time the game's over, the Ravens are going to have enough of him.
Go ahead.
I don't think
you go first, Keith. You go first.
I mean, I am just not enough of a technician to be able to give you that kind of prediction. But he's a fantastic player, and apparently he's not involved in any bounties right now. So,
well, that's good.
Yeah,
but I mean, don't you think that the Ravens are going to be one of the stouter defenses that Frank Gore is going to try to bull through the center of that line?
Yeah, I do. But what I really think is it was just the way that they, like I said, they went right back to him. They didn't start getting tricky and come up with, you know, the long ball and stuff. And I think over the long run, if he has any success at all, it's going to really open it up for Kaepernick. And that, I heard somebody say earlier about him being a baseball player. Yeah, not only can that kid run, but he can really fire the ball. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, well, I think I would say this on Frank Gore is that when you have a quarterback that has that kind of threat, the dual threat where he can throw and he can run, once you throw another threat into the backfield,
yeah.
I mean, you have three things you're gearing off of now. And I think it's one thing if you've got a running back and you got a drop back passer and you have two options.
Right.
You're looking at three
yeah.
viable options. So it's hard to key off of any of these things. And so
right.
I would agree. I also do believe, and maybe people will disagree with me on this, I happen to believe that running back is one of the more interchangeable positions in the NFL. I mean, there are many, many fantastic running backs, and there are many gifted athletes. There have been great ones. There have been Emmitt
yeah.
Smiths and Walter Paytons, people who are almost dancers, I suppose, that are gifted. But, you know, the reality is the life of an NFL running back is 3 years, and then they're, you know, into knee surgery. So I think
every play ends up with a, you know, you being driven to the ground, or worse yet, they hold you up and try to strip the ball from
yeah,
you. Now,
right.
I mean, it's just gang tackling has become that's another. I'll save that for another show, but that's another one of our top peeves is where they grab somebody and they're obviously not trying to tackle them; they're just holding them up long enough for somebody else to rip the ball out of his arm.
Well, it was a lot worse 25 years ago. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I was an Earl Campbell fan. They just used to rip the clothes off of me.
Russ, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Of course, there's also Ray Rice, another tremendous back in this game. So I think Flacco makes the difference in this one. I think I got a feeling.
God, he's got a lot to play for too. I mean, that's another thing to think about. If you believe in that kind of stuff,
yeah,
where he's the one with the reputation, and he hasn't worn it particularly well this year. Where, you know, some of these guys, the comments don't get to him, they get to Flacco, and
yeah.
So it actually, you know, it almost reminds me a little of Nolan Richardson, where even after he won a title at Arkansas, he was still angry.
Still had the chip on his shoulder.
And I would be surprised to see if that happens with Flacco.
Let's go over to Bill in Albany. Bill, you're on with Keith Strudler.
Yes, good day, gentlemen. I'm calling about salaries. I have a problem with these high-priced athletes, and many of them are mediocre. For example, Ray, I think you like the Mets, David Wright.
Yeah.
They just signed him to, like, $100 million contract.
Yeah.
He's a mediocre player. Now, granted, their athletic career is short-lived, but when I look at the ordinary working people of this country and compare their salaries to what the athletes are making, it upsets me, because my opinion is, what do they contribute to society?
Well, of course, you're absolutely right. But of course, the argument can be made that, you know, no one really wants to. I don't know what you do, but just as an example, you know, no, 80,000 people aren't going to want to go watch Bill work, but yet 80,000 people want to go and watch Ray Rice run, or go to the movies and see Brad Pitt or somebody. That's why they make the money, because they bring in the money. I think that's the bottom line.
And I would contend, really, that the two groups of people that are underpaid in this country are radio hosts and college professors.
Well, obviously.
But I would also, you know, speaking to the money, obviously, you know, are they paid too much? A lot of that depends on who you ask. But what we're seeing is the tip of the iceberg. We see these athletes that make incredible sums of money. And I think, by the way, we do need to differentiate between the different sports. Baseball is very different than basketball, which is very different than football. Do I think football players are overpaid? Absolutely not. If they were, most of them wouldn't be bankrupt several years after they finished playing. I think they have non-guaranteed contracts.
Yeah.
They are giving their bodies. Very few, you know, after a day of work, I go home and I feel fine. You know, 10 years from after they retire, they can't walk and they may have concussions. So I don't think they're overpaid in that regard. And the other thing is, you know, we rarely, you know, look at someone who wins a lottery and say that they shouldn't have gotten that much. Well, they did, because they took risks and they were the one of the millions and millions that put in. Remember that for everyone that makes this money, there are thousands that didn't, that gave of themselves and didn't, you know. So in this economy, I think, you know, if you want to make the argument that maybe college athletes should be paid as well and we should spread some of this wealth, that's I could buy into that. But I don't think that a professional football player is inherently overpaid. I think he has made enormous sacrifices. That doesn't mean he contributes. He's certainly not a brain surgeon. He doesn't save lives. But he has taken that risk and I think deserves that reward.
Well, yeah, I think Bill's point is correct. In fact, you know, sports people and movie stars and everybody makes so much money. However, it's society's. Society is to blame, Bill, and not the players, I guess, because we care, you know.
Yeah. We don't have to watch, but we do, actually. I mean, you know, so I don't look at football. There are certain athletes that maybe I think have been overpaid, and one of them plays for the Yankees and may not be playing there much longer.
A-Rod, yeah. Yes, we just saw a little thing on that. Ian Pickus was quite surprised. There was a Daily News headline that said, you know, A-Rod on the way out. So there you go. Yeah. Well, you know, the deer antlers. Hey, Bill, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Bye now. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. The Super Bowl is coming up. Keith Strudler is our guest. Any sport you want to talk about, throw it at him and see what he can do. Beth in Vermont, you're on.
Hi. I'm calling because I'd like to know some more information about the post-concussion disorder.
Okay. First of all, I think the good answer to that, or the best answer to that, is we all want to know a little bit more about the disorder or the trauma that comes from repeated head injuries, and that is something that they are finally starting to look into. And you know, they have a center at Boston University that's focused on this. The NFL has finally started to fund and acknowledge this. But I think, you know, from the most basic kind of definition, it seems that the repeated trauma from getting hit in the head over and over, and we're not, you know, people say, well, they played 3 years in the NFL. They didn't just play 3 years in the NFL. They played 4 years in college and 4 years in high school and 3 years in junior high school and 4 years in PE.
Yeah.
And if you want to have not to put any sport on the spot, but if you want to have a depressing morning, go to a go to a hospital on a Saturday, Sunday morning and wait for a kid to get, you know, brought in on a gurney, strapped down with his helmet still on, because this happens all the time across America. So there is repeated trauma. I think none of us know the extent to which this causes, you know, really long-term damage.
And Beth, you know, there is a great article. It was on the front page of our website, WAMC.org, when this show started. It may have gone down the list a little bit, but it's in the NPR stories, and it's on just this, and one person saying, well, the only thing we can do is not watch. So you may want to check that article out at our website.
Well, thank you very much. The reason I was interested in this is because I have a son that suffered his third concussion, and that final concussion was pretty serious, and he is not allowed to play football anymore, and I'm just concerned about what's going to happen somewhere down the line with him.
You know, that's certainly a question, obviously, for a doctor, and it would be obviously worthwhile paying attention to the research that's coming out. You know, a lot of what they've been looking at really seems to be for repeated
yes.
trauma, and I think these are often athletes who have gone through years and years of hitting and concussions. And a lot of these athletes, you know, it's good that you know the number of concussions that your son has had, and it's good that they are, you know, they're pulling him out and that they've realized this isn't going to be a healthy way to go on. But, you know, we have athletes, you know, they used to call them head ringers, or, you know, get back in there, slap them on the tush and get going. So, you know, the reality is Junior Seau may have had two dozen concussions. We just don't know.
A lot of times that's what happens. They just shake it off and go right on out there. Beth, we got a break here, but thanks for calling. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. More coming up.
Support comes from the Birch School, Orange County, a new independent day school and center for homeschool classes, working to provide a child-centered, nature-based learning community for ages 4 to 17. TheBirchSchool.org. Charles Padula DDS, Union Avenue, Schenectady. Family dentistry, including laser cavity detection and computer-aided local anesthesia. PaduladDDS.com. Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, presenting the Winter Hoot, with music by Amy Helm, Mike and Ruthie, and more. Activities for all ages and local food, February 1st through the 3rd. AshokanCenter.org. And Lucky Chocolates, Saugerties, New York. Organic and fair trade truffles and treats, seasonal chocolates. LuckyChocolates.com.
Keith Strudler is our guest. The Super Bowl coming up on Sunday. We're having a general talk about football and sports, and we have something from the Facebook, I think. Tom Jobe is here.
From the Facebook, Tommy says, and it goes along with money and athletes, one of this country's biggest problems is the importance placed on sports. If half the money spent on sports went to helping people in need or other socially beneficial pursuits, we would live in a much better world.
No arguing. You can't really argue that.
You can't argue. You can say that about a lot of things, I would say. But yes, I mean, it's hard to argue that as a factual truism.
1-800-3... Thank you, Tom. Come back,
if
you wish. 1-800-348-2551. Don't forget the fun drive kicks off on Monday morning at 6 a.m. If you want to shorten the drive, and we're already $202,000 into it, you can feed the lockbox. We'll open the lockbox on the first morning of the fun drive. Everything will count, and, all right, it's a million-dollar drive. We've got 202 in the bank. That's probably 2 days off the drive right there. So you've done well. Let's keep it up. Let's go back to the phones, and it is Rick in Glenford. Rick, you're on.
Yes, hey, hello.
Hey.
Hi.
How you doing? I guess I feel like I'm more of a traditionalist in, you know, in a lot of sports equipment, but especially in the game of golf.
Okay.
And I just wanted to get your... you know, your thoughts about, you know, now I guess they're going to outrule the belly putter like in a year or two or something like that.
What's a belly putter?
Oh, it's the big long putters you hold all the way
up. Where you anchor to your sternum and stuff like that, and it can possibly give you an advantage.
It's like the size of a small tree.
And as one gets older, are you familiar with this stuff? Or
Keith is.
Yeah, no, I know the putters. Now, I'll also tell you, I played golf for about 3 years because my dad made me, and I finally stopped because I broke all my clubs on a tree one day.
Oh, well, yeah, and that's why I hardly play as much as I used to. But when I get out there, I like to try to, you know, because every once in a while when you flush, like hit it great and hit a great shot, it's great. But certainly to do that all the time does take a lot of skill. And then even, you know, now they've brought in hybrids and then obviously the technology, you know, in skiing and lots of sports, but especially golf as well, you know, they've made it, you know, with these hybrid golf clubs as well. So instead of having to hit a 3-iron, which is quite difficult, you use a hybrid, yeah, and it makes it easier. So they're
like
making
a composite
the game.
Bat.
Yeah, it's like a composite between a blade, you know, like a regular 3-iron and a wood.
I see.
You know, a hybrid. So there's all this garbage out there, which I guess for some people they love it and it makes them enjoy the game better. But I think it really waters down the whole aspect of golf.
Well, if you play it recreationally, it doesn't really matter, right? You just wouldn't play with that person.
Well, I would just make fun of them when I'm playing with them and stuff like that.
Look, I would be cheating anyway. I'd be kicking every ball anyway. So.
There you go. So, again, in the golf world, if you listen to the Golf Channel, there's a big controversy about this whole thing, you know, outlawing, you know, belly putters and but I guess that's we've exhausted it, but I do believe Tiger will win more majors.
Yeah, he won the other day, right?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, but that doesn't really count. It's not a major.
Can we also acknowledge that golfers like to argue about a lot of things, though? That this will not be, you know, the only thing.
Well, they got a lot of time on their hands. Let's face it.
Yes.
So the other thing I'd say, though, with the technology, remember, you know, golf loves to cling to tradition a little bit more, but every sport that involves any kind of equipment has gone through this. Cycling several years ago made rules about, you know, bikes requiring having a double diamond. Swimming went through the same issue. You know, obviously baseball has gone through it, both for, you know.
Yeah, but then like sports for people, you know, recreational sports, the skis got shorter and wider.
Yeah.
And even in my windsurfing sport, you know, they've just really done all sorts of stuff. I mean, but that's technology. And most of the time I'd rather, you know, it was hard for me to give up a wooden tennis racket,
maybe I'm off on this one, but I kind of like the new stuff. It keeps it fun. It keeps everyone in business. But I do enjoy watching the new technology. It makes me feel a little bit faster, a little bit stronger.
Thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. You know, I guess if it's an even playing field, then
after hearing the Lance interview, that's kind of an odd term to use, the level playing field.
Well, but I mean, that's drugs, right?
Yeah.
And they were all allegedly doing that in cycling. But I mean, as far as equipment goes, maybe with the exception of baseball, where records mean quite so much. But if you're golfing and all the golfers have that same composite technology, isn't it okay?
I think there is another issue, though, that at times when equipment becomes so expensive, it starts to take the game away from the average person, and it makes it difficult for young kids to start playing. It takes it out of many urban neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And you saw that, you know, certainly with tennis, golf has always been an issue. Lacrosse, hockey, so
baseball. Go try to buy a baseball bat for your kid.
Oh, I'm hoping we don't have to.
Spend $150 this spring.
We're playing soccer, track. I get some shoes, and they can run.
It's a little water, and you're good to go. Pauline in Washington, Mass. You're on.
Yes, Ray. Hi. Very interesting. I was just listening, and I want to make a comment to the previous woman's comment about the brain injury. My brother-in-law was a pro quarterback in the 70s, and he just finished or is in the process of being the spokesperson for UCLA, who's having his studies on just this, concussions of quarterbacks and other players in the NFL.
Yeah.
And it just came out. It was on NBC, CBS, and it's also been a bunch of articles in the science journals. And it's very interesting because even though he was not hit as often because he didn't play quite as much or wasn't on the field as much, even he has been proven to have brain damage from this. And if anyone's interested, they can go to UCLA's site or to NBC, CBS, and it has been on television. The study just came out last week as the results of over quite a few years that he's been in the study, brain injury study.
Does he feel different? Can he tell that there is a problem?
Yes, he feels there is, even though, as he said, he's one of the lucky ones. But he's, of course, also, he's now 64, and as he said, he is concerned, what does this mean for his future when he's in his 70s or 80s. But yes, he does feel the difference, and the studies have proven that there has been damage to his brain. And like, he's lucky of the many that have been studied in this particular group, he's one of the ones who has had the least damage.
Well, can I actually have an interesting question about this? Does he feel that professional sports has let him down? Does he feel that they've disbanded him? And would it make a difference if they gave him money? Or is that a red herring?
No, No, I don't think so at all. I don't think Wayne, I think he was, from what I know when speaking with him, is that he was let down because in the 70s there was a very big drug culture as far as he was concerned, and he did leave the sport. Things have changed, he thinks, for the better, but he thinks it is very important to do something to correct the helmets or make some amends to make sure that there isn't any future or continues to have as you know, back then, of course, equipment was much far different in the 70s even than it is today. And he does not feel let down, I don't think, ever. I think he just feels that it's very important that they make amends, but that they make progress in preventing this from becoming, having a lot of serious, you know, injuries down the road, that every NFL quarterback or linesman or whoever who gets knocked or gets a concussion doesn't have possibly, you know, an early death or brain injuries later on. I think he's involved in the study because he thinks it's very important. I don't think it's for any trying to get money or being against the NFL at all. No, he's not like that at all. He just feels this is a very important thing to do to protect the young people and the upcoming football players.
Is he part of the 3,800 some odd players who are in the lawsuit against the NFL?
I think he is, but I don't want to on that 100% because I'm not really sure, but if I'm not mistaken, I think he is part of that, yes. But he started this study quite a while ago with several players from the who now live in the Los Angeles area with UCLA to do the studies on the brain.
Now, I will say I talk and I would like to say hi to all my students listening back in Poughkeepsie.
Uh-huh.
Yes, and you know, live, of course. And I would say this. I talked to a lot of our football players about this, and they are remarkably aware of the helmet choices and the risks that they're taking. And I think more so, obviously, than people from previous generations. Mm-hmm. Yet I've never seen one of my students that I've talked to ever say they won't play because of this. And it kind of brings up that interesting question that we have in almost every sport is, do we have an obligation to protect ourselves from ourselves? You know, we do. Mm-hmm. We do when we drive cars. We do when, you know, in a lot of parts of our life, we're having a debate about guns at this point.
Yeah.
There are a lot of parts in this world where we make rules to protect ourselves from ourselves. Because, you know, I was a track kid growing up. I ran races with torn ligaments, messed up knees, and all, which is the excuse I use for losing. But but you know, you had a very, it's very hard to protect yourself in those situations. Not because anyone's necessarily forcing you to do it, but because you really want to. That's why you do it in the first place. So I think there's going to be an interesting debate about whether or not people have the right jurisdiction and obligation to protect some of these athletes from themselves, even.
Pauline, your brother, in talking to him all
the
these
brother,
years.
Brother-in-law.
In talking to him, I mean, do you get the sense that he would do it again?
Oh, yes, I think so. He loves the sport. Both his sons played football. Matter of fact, his oldest son is a football coach for high school. He actually, my brother-in-law also does the high school. I think he's a referee, does high school referee, and he loves the sport, is devoted to the sport, and I think that's why he's doing the study, is because he is devoted to the sport, not because he wants people to be aware of the dangers, and can somehow the NFL or the players, can there be some more safeties given to the players so that maybe the concussions or whatever is not as bad, if I'm making any sense.
No,
I'm not speaking very clearly, but
great deal of sense.
I think he loves the sport. Absolutely. He adores, and his sons do, and they're very devoted to it. But I think everyone realizes, you know, is there any way we can make it a little bit safer?
Yeah. Well, Pauline, what a great call. Thank you so much. 1-800-348-2551 is the number we have. We're in the home stretch. 1-800-348-2551. Well, you know, the linemen are bumping heads on every play. Regardless of how good your helmets are and what rule changes you make, these guys are hitting heads every time.
So here's what you can't fix. You can't fix a guy, and this is, you know, I do remember a little physics from high school. You can't change that equation of force equals mass times acceleration. So in this world where athletes are running 4.3 or 4.4, 4.5 and weigh 240, what are you going to do about that? And so, and the notion that they'll never hit with their head or they'll never, you know, it's impractical. And I think that it's illogical, I think, and I'm not in that business, but to think that we'll be able to construct a helmet, per se, that's going to be able to keep us from hurting ourselves when people are that big and that strong. And that trend's not going to end. PDAs are not. We will be bigger and stronger and faster because that's what we do.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. Pauline's brother-in-law, who has issues, maybe he was a backup quarterback, not hit as often, but still has post-concussion issues. He was fine with his kids playing.
That's exactly, and that was kind of the point I was trying to make, is that, you know, do we save ourselves from ourselves? Yeah. Because you would think in that kind of situation, you'd say, well, I don't want my kids doing this. Yeah. I know better now. And I don't think that's the case. And I think if you asked most of these people who have gone through it, they'd say they'd do it again.
Yeah.
Like I said, the college kids that I know, bright, young athletes who happen to just love football. And I watched them cry at the end of their last game. And they love it in a way that's hard to really explain.
Some of the players and former players who say, you know, I would have my kids play, say it's important that they're taught correctly. And at an early age, taught how to do things properly. That is the most important thing in protecting yourself from these type of injuries.
It is. But, the kind of education you need to make that happen, it's a lot to put that on young coaches, young volunteer coaches.
I mean,
and a lot of us have coached, our kids' teams. And so, you get out there on a Saturday and you say, all right, who knows how to kick a football? Who knows how to throw a shot put?
Yeah.
And so I think that's a lot to put on us. And there's such incentive to do well in this sport. And so it makes it really hard to always do the right thing.
Vox Pop is the program. 1-800-348-2551. Rick in Albany. Rick, you're on.
Hey, how are you, Ray?
Hey.
I was going to bring up the subject of, television and advertising and why the salaries are so high, because you had a few calls on that. And, if you ever go to a professional football game, you see these poor athletes in 10-degree weather have to stand around for, 270 seconds sometimes, waiting for the commercials to end before they can play again, freezing their butts off. But on the head injury thing, this is kind of off the cuff, but we keep trying to make the helmets better, and the more effective the helmets are, the more the head is used as a weapon. Maybe we should go back to leather helmets, and people won't use their head as a weapon anymore. Any
Yikes.
Thoughts on that?
Well,
yeah, I've heard that theory before. I don't want to be the test case on that one.
It's counterintuitive, but you might be honest.
I know that if I didn't have one of those helmets on, I would think twice before I launched myself like a bullet.
Well, I wouldn't even go on the field without a helmet. I mean, the sidelines,
Yeah, well, okay. Well, something to talk about. Anyway,
hey, Rick, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to John in Newburg. John, you're on.
Yes, I'm one of these people who have these weird brains who can think of solutions to things. I have 40 patents, and I think there's an easy solution to the helmet question in football,
okay.
And that is you just put like an inch of soft material on the outside of the helmet. So now if someone wants to or mistakenly hits with his helmet, there's a soft material that cushions the blow.
So it looks like almost like the outside of a members-only jacket, kind of on the... Right, with the
and if it's helmet to helmet, you have two soft things that interact with each other.
Well, if you have 40 patents, don't be telling us. You go ahead and you get that patented and make some money.
No,
on that.
I'm not worried about that, but there is an easy solution to it.
That's very interesting. I have not heard that one.
I haven't. The thing to remember is a soft helmet doesn't look really good on TV when you walk them out like gladiators. Now, this is part of the issue.
But you could do it for all these young kids who are 8 or 10 years old whose brains aren't fully developed.
Maybe. Yeah.
Sure.
You might have something. John, thanks a lot. Let's go to Lisa in Pittsfield. Lisa.
Hi. I just a quick comment. When your guest, and I'm sorry, I'm turned in late, so I didn't...
Keith Strugler.
Yeah. When you were talking about your students and how you asked them if, knowing all this, would they still play? And they all said yes, and nobody wanted to not play. You guys were talking about people protecting them from themselves, kind of like with driving. Not all, I guess you can't be that broad of a stroke, but isn't there just kind of a thing with people who are young that it's not going to happen to me, that kind of invincibility? So I think asking them is kind of not really a... I think asking parents that are in the know would be a little better, people who have gone through, but I think you talk about speeding or drunk driving or anything, and it's always, well, it won't happen to me.
Yeah, certainly there's truth to that, and the younger you are, I still do a lot of cycling, and I do some triathlons, and I like riding competitively. I am much more cautious today than I used to be. On the other hand, I still get out there, and cars still go by.
Right.
But, and I also know, I think, yes, there's something to that, but I know a lot of parents who are getting ready to sign their kids up for peewee football. And, I grew up in Texas and in Florida, and you drive by the parks and the fields, on Saturday mornings and Tuesday and Thursday afternoons, and you see the six-year-olds out there with the pads that are as wide as they are tall.
Yeah.
And it's real cute, but they... the parents aren't necessarily thinking the way that we might think they would. Now, and that will be the tipping point, though. That's what
I think that's true, and I think some of it is the culture of perception of what it means to be a football player. And even with the parents, if my kid, you know, about to college, about to the NFL,
yeah,
absolutely.
Free ride.
Yeah, which is, you know, sadly unrealistic for most.
Lisa, we're out of time, but thank you very much for the call, and thanks to everybody who called in. Well, Mr. Strudler, you did pretty well for a first time in a long time.
Is this graded? I didn't know if we did this.
I'd give you a B+.
That's fine.
And that's not bad. I mean, there's a curve.
That's a lot higher than my college cum. So
you're on my curve. So if you're curved with me, you probably were around a D, but I'm around an F. So you're doing fine. Hey, thanks to everybody who called in. Thanks to Zach, the engineer. Thanks to Matt Don Diego for answering the calls. Patrick Donjus is the guy who produces this program. Support comes from Empire State English, Albany, New York, offering beginning through advanced English as a second language with private and group classes, including TOEFL, EmpireStateEnglish.org. Don Muller Gallery, Northampton, Massachusetts, specializing in jewelry, custom designs, handcrafted glass, and gifts by American artists since 1978. Facebook and DonMullerGallery.com. And Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, quarry and fabrication, rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking, ashfieldstone.com. That's it for today's Vox Pop. Thanks again to Keith Strudler. You can hear his commentaries on Wednesday, right, Keith?
Wednesday.
Moyers & Company tomorrow at this time, and then on Monday, 6 a.m., our $1 million winter fun drive begins. Stay tuned and feed the lockbox.